Welcome back. So after spending all of yesterday and this morning exploring the first foundation of mindfulness, bodyfulness, mindfulness of the body, I'd like to move on now to the second of these four establishments of awareness, which is mindfulness of what's known as feeling tone, or Vedana to use the Pali word. And this feeling tone is a technical term that refers to our capacity to register any experience that we have as either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Just that very first hit of knowing something in one of these three ways before it complexifies into some kind of emotional reaction. And the reason that we look at this is because, well, the Buddha was a master at deconstructing our experience so that we can understand more easily how not to get caught up in it. In fact, one of the ways the Pali word vipassana, or insight, is literally translates as seeing clearly, or seeing distinctly, or seeing separately. In other words, starting to see all the different components of our experience that come together to make a sense of me, who I am, create this sense of self in the world. So sometimes I think of insight practice as being a strategy of what we might think of as divide and conquer. Because most of the time we're experiencing so much all at once that it seems it can be quite overwhelming. But if we apply the template of these four establishments of mindfulness, we can start to separate out what's happening in the body, what's happening in the mind, our thoughts, our moods, our emotions, and so on. And when we see each part separately, it's usually a little bit easier to manage. Most of the time, though, when we're in our ordinary lives and if we don't have much mindfulness training, it's as if we live in a movie that we're the star of, that we've written the script of, that we direct, that we produce, and we create all kinds of intense dramas, and then we inhabit these as if they were real. But all of the Buddha's teachings are helping us to see through these dramas. So to stretch the analogy a bit, it's metaphorically as if he's inviting us to turn our attention away from the seduction of the story on the screen and look back at the projector. And I think most of you are old enough to remember the old reel kind of projectors. They're digital these days, so it's not quite as graphic. But those old projectors, we could see, oh, it's just light shining through a piece of plastic, projecting images onto a screen. None of this is real. And sure, we go back into the story and we still have our responses, but some part of us knows this is just a story. So in a similar way, the Buddha's inviting us to turn our attention to the mechanism of how all this is happening instead of our usual habit of being lost in the content, lost in the story and the drama. So this morning I introduced the what are known as the six sense doors. And the Buddha points out that at any one moment of experience, there's only ever one of six things happening: a sight, a sound, a smell, a taste, a touch, or some kind of mental activity. That's all. And yet, most of the time, we get lost in these experiences and make them into me, incorporate them into my story, have them define who I am. But with this invitation to look at the second foundation of mindfulness, the feeling tone, we're invited to notice that with each of these contacts at the sense doors, there's an automatic recognition by a fairly primitive part of our minds of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And we can't do anything about that recognition. It's just part of our biology. But what we can do something about is our habitual tendency to react automatically to those feeling tones. So on one level, this is pretty obvious. If a contact at one of the sense doors registers as pleasant, we want to hold on to it. We like it. We try to prolong it. If it registers as unpleasant, obviously the opposite. We want to push it away and get rid of it. And if something registers as neutral, we tend to space out. We don't notice. We disconnect from the experience. We ignore it. So these three feeling tones have a very powerful role as building blocks for all of our later reactivity. So when we start to practice with feeling tone, the instructions are the same as they are for the first three foundations of mindfulness. We simply know what we're experiencing without evaluating it or trying to change it in any way. So I'll read you the actual words from the sutta, the text. And how, practitioners, does one in regard to feeling tone abide contemplating feeling tones? Here, when feeling a pleasant feeling tone, one knows, I feel a pleasant feeling tone. When feeling an unpleasant feeling tone, one knows, I feel an unpleasant feeling tone. When feeling a neutral feeling tone, one knows, I feel a neutral feeling tone. It's so obvious, so basic. And yet, that's not how most of us relate to these experiences. So I want to point out that I'm using the word feeling tone rather than feeling or feelings, which is somehow how it's sometimes how this word Vedana is also translated. But I prefer feeling tone because feelings in English can be used to describe emotions. And this foundation of mindfulness is not about emotions. It's about that much simpler, just that basic hit of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So feeling tone is the first link in a whole chain reaction. And usually it's happening just below the level of consciousness. But we can start to tune into it, and even as you sit here right now, perhaps you notice the sunlight streaming through that window. For some of you, it might be really pleasant, and you find your attention drawn to it. For others, it might be, oh, that's glary. No, look down. For others, it might be, oh, yeah, there's a window there. Hadn't even noticed it. So right below almost the level of consciousness, we have this interplay of feeling tone going on all of the time. And for me, at least, when I first found out about these teachings, they were quite confronting because I had this kind of belief that I was a sophisticated human being and was full of all these complex, intelligent responses to the world. But when I looked carefully, I realized I'm not that much different from an amoeba. You know, an amoeba, if something is pleasant, it sort of blobs its way towards it. And if something's unpleasant, the amoeba blobs away from it. And if it's neutral, it just says, bleh. And I realized on some level, it's not that much different from my mind. If you really pay attention all through the day, pretty much everything we're doing is motivated by moving towards what we like, moving away from what we don't like, or spacing out when something is neutral. So it can be a little bit, humbling to really start to recognize this second foundation. And part of the value of seeing this is that, as the Buddha described many centuries before neuroscience, he didn't put it in this way, but the meaning is the same. Neurons that fire together wire together. So the more we don't see pleasant and our habitual reaction to it, the more we tend to strengthen the habit of wanting and of greed, to use the traditional terminology. Likewise, when something is unpleasant and we don't see our habitual tendency to resist or react to it, the more we strengthen the pattern in the mind of aversion, ill will. And likewise, when something is neutral and we space out and disconnect, we strengthen the habit of ignorance. So some of you may recognize greed, hatred, and delusion as these three root so-called poisons or defilements. And these are understood in the Buddha's teachings to be the core negative or unskillful mental states that really keep us spinning around and around and around, lost in our habitual reactivity. So just to say that when we hear about root poisons or root defilements, perhaps some of us with a Judeo-Christian heritage, we might have a little bit of a reaction, because it's easy to hear words like defilements and conflate them with concepts of sin or punishment and so on. So it's important to keep in mind that these terms are not saying that we ourselves are fundamentally defiled or flawed or polluted in some way. The Buddha spoke about what he called adventitious defilements. And this word adventitious means visiting or not inherent. So these defilements are energies, afflictive energies that visit us from time to time. They're not inherently who we are. They're not qualities that we can or should identify with. So we have these three basic challenging energies, and they come in three flavors. Unfortunately, not strawberry, vanilla, and chocolate. They come in greed, hatred, and delusion, or craving, aversion, and ignorance. And each one of these covers a whole spectrum of experience. So greed, on the one hand, is the most intense, addictive kind of craving energy, all the way through to just the slightest trace of nice, wanting something. Hatred or aversion or ill will is, on the one extreme, the most intense murderous rage or the most paralyzing fear, all the way through to just that slight trace of irritation or frustration or very minor pulse of anxiety. And ignorance, delusion, includes the most extreme forms of denial and living in fantasy land, complete disconnection from reality, right through to just the slightest form of blanking out or spacing out or driftiness. So these three cover a whole spectrum of degrees of intensity. And there's a quote from Pema Chodron who talks about how these three can impact us. She's a Western Tibetan Buddhist nun whom many of you are probably familiar with. And she talks about these in relation to the image of the Grand Canyon as a metaphor for the potential vastness of the mind when it's freed from these three visiting defilements. She says, "The three poisons are always trapping you in one way or another, imprisoning you and making your world really small. When you feel craving, you could be sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon, but all you can see is that piece of chocolate cake that you're craving. With aversion, you're sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and all you can hear are the angry words that someone said to you years ago. And with ignorance, you're sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon with a paper bag over your head." So each of these three poisons has the power to capture you so completely that you don't even perceive what's right in front of you. And maybe some of you have had your own small examples of this today. These different ways that we get pulled towards or away from or space out and disconnect from experience. And just to say, when people hear all this talk about greed and wanting and so on, this is not about trying to ignore or avoid any kind of enjoyment. It's not about getting rid of pleasant experiences. It's about noticing when we've moved away from just knowing pleasant as pleasant and into the terrain of nice, like, more, prolong, enhance, and so on. And for each one of us, that will be a spectrum. And as we explore this, we might discover that when we can just be with the pleasantness exactly as it is, it's actually more enjoyable than when we're moving in the terrain of trying to hold on. Some kind of anxiety creeps in. Oh, this is great. How can I hold on to it? Is there going to be another piece of cake? Oh no, she's taking the last one. Oh, I missed my chance, and so on. So we see how quickly that chain reaction happens. And if we can come back to just this mouthful, just this pleasant taste, just this enjoyable smell, we can still have our sense pleasures, but we don't have the hangover that comes when we get caught in greed. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, I'd like to explore this quality of feeling tone more directly, again using the support of each other to help really stay present with these fairly, at times, subtle experiences. The same instructions as yesterday apply, that we'll be exploring feeling tone with this quality of bare awareness. So trying to stay as close as possible to just naming out loud whatever experiences at the sense doors register, firstly as unpleasant. And so you're naming that as simply unpleasant without our usual analysis or judgment or story or reactivity to it. Is that pretty clear? I'll talk you through it as we do the exercise, but for now, again, let's just take a few moments to stand, and I'll offer a very short guided walking meditation to lead us into the practice.